It's that time again. It's twice a month time, second and fourth Fridays for a trip. We all pack up and mentally go to Forest City, Iowa, and take a look at that magnificent waterway known as the Big W. But of course there is that other wonderful part of these twice a month treks to Forest City. It's a time to spend and chat and share life and views of the paranormal and life in general with Brad Steiger, who along with his lovely bride, Sherry, have published to date over 158 books. I was close. He's online right now, I think. Is it 158 or 159?
It's still right at 156 that I've... Yeah, because
all four racks in the oven are full.
Yeah, they're being heated right now, ready to come. They're just about ready. Kind of go ahead and poke them with our finger once in a while, or toothpick.
Yeah.
They're just about done.
You're working around the clock. I know the truth.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Did you ever get the big millstone?
Hey, excuse me. We don't mention that.
Did you ever get the big deadline off your neck?
Not yet. We are still at it. It grows and grows, kind of some giant amoeba.
Now that kind of a book literally could suck up a year of your life.
Well, it's done a little more than that. See, it's three volumes, so it's mammoth.
How, you know, and what this is it's basically for you newcomers, or maybe if you missed it, it's rather an encyclopedia kind of a book, full of sidebars.
Mm-hmm.
Sidebars are magnificent fun to read, but they are hell to write.
You got that right.
You got to make them interesting and fun, and it's that detail work that makes a book so special.
But the thing of it is, and I understand this, and of course we shouldn't really even be talking about it, but then no one's listening, but...
No.
Just the two of us talking.
That's right.
Private conversation. This will be a magnificent three-volume encyclopedia for junior high and high school students.
You're targeting.
This, my friend, won't even be in the stores. This is strictly an highly educational project. So you see, it has to be gone over, all kidding aside, by editorial boards, educational boards, with a fine-tooth comb. So that's, you know, again, what's taking...
Well, listen, I don't think you'll have any problem. Some of the garbage they're putting in the curriculum today, come on.
Yeah.
This ought to be really nifty, and this is exciting. This will be the first...
Well,
of its kind, won't it, to be...
Right, and you see, it's with a very prestigious publishing firm, so I mean, they don't put anything out unless it's really top of the line. So again, I understand and appreciate it. It's just, you know, it's been a major project, as you well know.
We have a big UFO story.
Yes.
Breaking.
It
happened, I guess, last night. And let me do this real quickly for our listeners who will see it at rents.com and other websites, I'm sure, but it has been on the radio. It was on Fox News. At least a measure of it was on Fox News. I'm told that the presentation was done with the usual repressed and quasi-repressed giggles amongst some of the... anchor people who are listening to it. They have to do the obligatory put down. But this story is not going to be put down. This is another real important one, and the reasons are simple. Here's the story. Bright blue UFO scrambles 113th Squadron near D.C. This is from WTOP Radio. What was that bright light in Maryland's sky? WTOP has learned that residents near Andrews Air Force Base, we all know about that one, were shaken from their beds early Friday morning by some strange activity in the air. Incredible, absolutely incredible, is what Rennie Rogers of Waldorf called it. Just before 2 o'clock in the morning, Rogers says he saw a large blue ball of light streaking across the sky. but it was the military jets that really startled him. He said the jets were right on its tail. As the thing would move, a jet was right behind it. So these jets were actually in hot pursuit.
Oh, yeah.
This is not a, just a jet here and a light there. He is not the only one who saw it, however. Several people called WTOP radio reporting seeing a bright blue or orange ball moving very fast, being chased by jets. Rogers says there was no smoke coming from the object, no flashing lights, and says it was smooth and eerily silent. The Air National Guard confirms they scrambled 113th Squadron. This is unusual. I guess they'd be hard-pressed to deny that one. Spokesman Sheldon Smith says they are investigating and are in contact with NORAD. Now, the other part of the story is that NORAD ordered the jets scrambled. We're going to see and watch this story very closely for you all to see how they try to explain it away. If they try to explain it at all, they may not just say anything.
Now, this will be interesting, and we were munching on our sweet corn when we saw it on Fox, and I must say that Brian Wilson, not the spirit of the Beach Boy, but the newscaster Brian Wilson, treated it quite seriously, and Shep Smith, you know, tried to make a few little jokes about it, but and Brian Wilson even pointed out that it is the 50th anniversary of the big sighting in 1952 in Washington, D.C., when they scrambled the jets.
Well, I have that up at Rents.com, and credit to the Washington Post for doing a serious job of recounting that event. People forget so easily, and for a whole generation or two who weren't around then, in 1952... Oh, you know, we've always talked about landing on the White House lawn. They came damn close.
Yes, they did.
They flew right over the White House lawn in a squadron, if you will. It was a cluster of objects.
That's right.
Seen, witnessed by military people on the ground, on in radar trucks, the works. This is no joke, and yet that event has all been, well, it's been buried.
We were hoping, because we have that photograph, and UFOs are here, we were hoping we could have time to... so that you could show it tonight, because we do have it. It's in. It was in Project Blue Book files, and I edited Project Blue Book, Freedom of Information Act, as you remember.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used the picture again, and UFOs are here. It's interesting, when we heard it on the news tonight, we didn't quite catch all of it, so Sherry and I said, well, let's run right upstairs, because I bet Jeff already has it posted.
Yeah, I
and
do.
There it was.
Yeah, I'm going to I will have James pull that story back up to the top of the headlines right away. I'll email him right now and ask him to pull that up. And we'll take a look at it here in a few minutes. An amazing photograph, stunned the nation, stunned the Capitol. Forget landing on the White House lawn. We had, a dozen or more objects right over the White House, flew around the sky. This wasn't, again, a little glimmer here and there. This was an overflight. This was a message.
And I was on tour for Project Blue Book, and station after station, this was incredible, you know, synchronicity, there are no coincidences. We agree on that, I know. And time after time, like you say, the host would make the obligatory White House lawn, and I'd mention the picture, and the host or hostess would again have to make the obligatory chuckles.
Uh-huh.
Time after time, when we would cut to commercial, because this was on television, when we'd cut to commercial, I remember someone in the control booth would say, "Don't laugh at Steiger. I was there. I was a radar operator. I was a radio operator.
Yeah, sure.
I was about Jeff, place after place after place." When we came back on camera, the host or hostess had to eat crow in front of everyone, and many times they'd bring down a member from their staff, and they told the most extraordinary stories of what they had seen on that day.
No kidding.
Well, I remember one who was a radar operator aboard ship during that time, who was now in the TV station in Kansas or wherever, and he said that they watched on the radar the UFO approaching at almost sea level, as if it was checking out the ships, and then, and he heard the officers speaking later,
Uh-huh.
Those officers on the bridge literally saw it go through the battleship and then take off.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we have a story which has, talk about sidebars.
Yes.
Isn't it?
There will be one.
Here's another sidebar. Isn't it interesting how NORAD scrambled that fighter wing, and yet they couldn't do it on September 11th, or wouldn't do it on September 11th? Figure that out. Nice to see those men and women up there at least some of the time. Okay, think about that one, and we'll pause and come right back. And, you know, Brad, I really have to go back to that little out comment I made about that, and I've gotten two emails on it already from sharp-minded listeners. What is it about this UFO that differentiated things from four airliners that literally dropped off radar on September 11th, one of which was clearly being piloted toward the Capitol? What was it about all that kept those fighters on the ground?
That's
one of the biggest, most aggravating, unnerving questions about the whole thing.
It is, and it's a part where, you know, part of you doesn't even want to go there.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Now, there's another story that you reposted within the last, time goes so fast, but I don't think it's been more than a week or so, when you reposted your superb story about the air attack over Los Angeles in 42.
Oh, thank you. What I did, and thanks for bringing that up, if you go to rents.com, look on the left-hand side of the homepage, look under features. It's on the margin on the left side, and you'll see a number of interesting features. One of them is the 1942 Battle of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big story. Above that is the Battle of L.A. photo comparison. And that was sent in, it was an outstanding contribution by Frank Warren.
Yeah.
So I put the two up there for your consideration. Thanks to Frank on the air for that. And then below it, I added something that I had written that was extracted from the larger story about a woman I know who has sadly passed on in the last year. But she saw the whole thing, and this continuing effort to demean that entire episode as being some kind of a weather balloon or something is more than absurd. All you have to do, like you've done for decades, is to talk to people who saw something with their own eyes, and you get it.
One of the astonishing things, which you don't see anywhere, that you have it included there, is, and again, this puts the lie to the balloon, because they shot so much artillery, they shot so much lead, steel, up in the sky, that citizens were being killed and wounded as it fell down.
That's right. Heart attacks, car crashes, shrapnel. And we're to think that these men in the military back then were so stupid that they'd unleash 1,500, 2,000 rounds at a balloon.
At a balloon and couldn't hit it?
Well, the point is they did hit it. Whatever it was, they hit it.
But it didn't bring it down.
Of course not. The rounds burst around it, but there was no impact, no effect on it. It was pegged by the spotlights. I mean, they had this thing nailed. It was moving in slow motion across the basin of Los Angeles down toward Long Beach. It wasn't whizzing along. They had it.
Yeah, and that's what I say. You know, this is, it's the same thing reviewing the great Roswell thing, which, as I said, when I started researching and really going out amongst them, interviewing and so forth, back in the early 60s, late 50s, no one took Roswell seriously, because we had all bought into the weather balloon or kite or whatever. But then the more you thought about it, here again, these were the people that we relied upon to protect us from the sky, and they said this, they said flying saucer, and they even alluded to the excitement that was going on across the nation with these alleged objects in the sky. So here again, how in the world would trained officers call, and then poor Jesse Marcel kneeling beside a stick of balsa wood. And
yeah, talk about doing your duty.
Right, doing your duty, biting the bullet.
Yeah.
I mean, a trained officer, WW2, just, you know, over.
Look at his face, look at his eyes.
Yeah. Like, you know, forgive me, God, you know.
How in the world? You know, the other thing about Roswell and 1947 in July, people don't know, and our visitors to the site do, I think people who have read your books know, and others, that the months leading up to the Roswell date were packed. Indeed, it was a deluge of sightings, coast to coast, everywhere practically. People were seeing these things in daylight, at nighttime. Newspapers were full, thousands of column inches of stories about these things all over the country.
Which is why the press release from the Army at that time, because it wasn't Air Force yet, Army Air Force, alluded to, well, we finally got one of all those discs and saucers that you've been seeing all across the country. We've got one. And next day, whoops, it was a flimsy kite. I mean, it just boggles the mind. So here again, no matter, you want to believe when they issue formal statements like that. And people have asked me from time to time, you know, well, why are there so many conspiracies? Why do people doubt? And unfortunately, as much as we want to believe, there have just been so many of these blatant cover-ups and lies that the general public has just become, unfortunately, very skeptical and very doubting of its own government.
That's the way the game is played. You throw up so much chaff and noise that people get tired of it, they lose sight of it, they forget it. Create more noise and obscure the reality. That's the game. In the third block of news stories at Rents.com. Look at the first story, folks who are online. Historic UFOs, the original, July the 8th, 1947. Army has flying disc story is reproduced for you there with an actual JPEG scan of the story from the Sacramento Bee. And it's sent in again by Frank Warren. Thanks again, Frank. So take a look at that. Maybe when we come back, we'll read a few lines from that, and then we have a special guest who will be joining us shortly. So stay tuned for that as well as we continue with Brad Steiger. I'm Jeff Rentz. Glad you're with us. Here's the original story, Brad. I'm going to read this very quickly. This is an AP story, July the 8th, 1947. Now, you have to understand that the Army at that point, the Army Air Corps, was anything but incompetent.
Right.
This is right after World War II. Roswell, of course, many of you know, was the base that had nuclear weapons on hand. This is the most highly secret, highly classified, important air base in America. They're not boobs. Roswell, New Mexico, July 8th, Associated Press. And this is a direct quote. This was put out by the Air Force. The Army Air Force is here today announced a flying disc has been found on a ranch near Roswell and is in possession of the Army. Lieutenant Warren Haught, public information officer of the Roswell Army Airfield, announced the find had been made sometime last week and had been turned over to the airfield through the cooperation of the sheriff's office. Quoting now, it was inspected at the Roswell Army Airfield and subsequently loaned by Major Jesse A. Marcel of the 509th Bomb Group Intelligence Office in Roswell to higher headquarters. The Army gave no other details of Haught's statement. The many rumors regarding the flying discs became a reality yesterday when the intelligence office of the 509th Atomic Bomb Group of the 8th Air Force, Roswell Army Airfield, was fortunate enough to gain possession of a disc through the cooperation of one of the ranchers and the sheriff's office of Chavez County. The flying object landed on a ranch near Roswell sometime last week. Not having phone facilities, the rancher stored the disc until such time as he was able to contact the sheriff's office, who in turn notified Jesse Marcel of the 509th Bomb Group Intelligence Office. And it goes on from there, but you get the idea here. The official press release by Haut hardly an hallucination. I mean, these people were as good as they get back then. Those were the cream of the crop.
That's right. Now, my friend John Keel keeps insisting it was a Japanese Fugel balloon.
Come on, John.
Well, but, Jeff, the picture that was shown with Jesse Marcel, you can see why John and others would think that.
Yeah.
Because what are you seeing?
Well, I've seen pictures of the Fugel balloons actually being laid out and inflated in Japan during the war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That would pass, but...
Yeah, because they did send thousands of them over. And when you see that picture, like we said, of poor Jesse looking up like, you know, please forgive me, what do you see? I mean, you look like a little boy would recognize as the kite he's trying to fly on a Saturday afternoon.
Furthermore, I mean, here's one of the top intelligence officers at any air base anywhere on the planet. They sure as heck knew about Fugel balloons. This is 2 years after the war. They knew what they looked like. They had photographs of them being made, of being flown, and on and on and on.
They didn't know about weather balloons?
They're not about to make a mistake. This was not a mistake.
No.
The mistake was, I think, in trying to cover it up so stupidly, but I guess back then they were just given orders, cover it up, and they did the best they could.
Well, my cousin, who was stationed in Great Britain during WW2 and was a fighter pilot, and this is in all the aviation history books, he's the first man who shot down a jet airplane, a Nazi pilot flying over, shot him down, and again, they had a gallantry to some degree then. He saw that he landed, and they kept in touch until they passed away, writing to each other.
Really?
Yeah.
Did the Luftwaffe pilot bail out or land his craft?
Yes, he bailed out of the early prototype jet, my cousin then circled, and he visited him in Germany, and the German pilot came here to Iowa to visit. But anyway, the point I'm making is I asked him many times if he would mistake a weather balloon for an aircraft or a jet plane, and he just said, hardly. And, you know, again, the whole thing is how highly trained and how competent those young men were in WW2. I mean, I always resent because of, you know, I had an uncle in the Air Force during WW2, so, I mean, I resent the implication that these were dolts and buffoons who wouldn't know the difference between a strange craft and some flimsy balls of wood and paper thing.
Well, let's extrapolate that and take it right back to 1942 and the Battle of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
All of you folks are invited to look at the original photograph, the black and white photograph. It's a print made right from that photograph. And see the object captured in the headlights, spotlights, I should say, and you can see the artillery rounds bursting all around it. My friend Katie, who watched the whole thing, basically said they hit it many times.
It didn't
do any damage to it. It actually was, they exploded a little bit away from it. There was obviously some kind of a shield around it of some type.
Now, we quoted part of your excellent research there and your friend Katie in our book, UFO Odyssey. And, you know, we've heard from many people who think we just made it up. I mean, this is such a little-known incident of WW2 and ufology. So I'm just delighted that you've got it posted.
Yeah. Well, she had these piercing blue eyes, and she looked right at me. I said, is there any doubt? And she cut. There was a wave of almost anger. She said, it was no balloon. It was magnificent, she said. The most beautiful thing I've ever seen in the sky. Okay, we'll pause and we will come right back with more and a special guest in just a couple of minutes. Well, there may not be any Moors in Iowa, but if there were, that's the noise you'd hear going out for a walk late at night. Do you have anything like Moors over there?
Marshes, of course, same thing. Yes, we have many. We have the very large natural marsh where wildlife, especially birds, fly in from all over to do their mating and nesting and hatching and then flying on again.
Nice. That's good Moore music.
Excellent Moore music.
All right, we have a little business to take care of here. I wish I had some music for this. A reality check. We need a fanfare. Reality check for those of you who don't have both feet necessarily firmly on the ground at all times. You might get up on a toe here and there and kind of miss out on the humor of things. But there are a few, and so we need to make this generic and specific clarification.
Yes. We do not live in a castle, ladies and gentlemen. We've been having some fun and some fantasy and letting our imaginations, but regretfully, some people out there have believed us and have begun making certain demands. Also, you see, assuming that since if we can live in a castle, we are also extraordinarily wealthy, and we are somehow obligated,
absolutely,
to underwrite all kinds of, well, you know, it's sad because some of the letters speak of surgery that's desperately needed, and some of the requests are just silly, like people who think we should underwrite a vacation for them because they've been working hard, like we haven't. And so we, ladies and gentlemen, please
don't ask for money. Please don't write to the Steigers and ask for money. This is, actually, I'm a little shocked at this, to tell you the truth, that this would even happen, but it has, so we need to tell everyone, just on the record. I did put the pictures of the castles up there for fun. Obviously for fun. I grabbed a random house near a river and put that up there as a picture of the servants' quarters for fun. And you guys, 99.9% of you, I'm sure, and we'll revisit that from time to time, have fun with it like we do and we did. But there are a few that took the pictures seriously and don't understand that they were just random shots put up there for fun. Levity, humor, a bit of escapism, but they have nothing to do with Brad and Sherry's homes, castles, locations, or anything else. So just make sure you get
that. Some people wrote angry emails because I guess they had driven some distances expecting to see the castle, and then stopping in town for direction, of course, had the humiliation of being laughed at and saying there aren't any castles in Iowa. I'm sorry, but I'm sorry people couldn't see that we were joking and having fun. Yeah. We don't have servants. We've talked about Fred and Leonard. Fred and Leonard are our two cats. And we talked about the
house.
Yeah,
but they're very smart cats.
Oh, they are. They are indeed. we've talked about the households that we do not have servants. I think part of the misunderstanding, too, you know, they'll pick up a newspaper and see that Stephen King or someone got $1 million advance. People, authors who work in our field, the metaphysical, the spiritual field, we don't get those kind of advances. The reason I and Sherry and I are so productive is because we don't get those kind of advances. And also, it's our mission. It's our mission to share. So a good share of the money that we do receive, of course, we have to pay for our own research. We have to pay for our own everything because we're self-employed. So, again, we're not asking for anyone to send us donations, but we are trying to make clear that to spare us having to write these sad letters, you know, we are not able to underwrite vast projects that people think we should be able to underwrite, and we simply cannot undertake that.
The stories of Henry Kissinger and Alan Greenspan flying in on Gulfstream jets and being taken to the castle for consultation with Lady Sherry are not true.
They're not true.
Now, you guys got to get this straight. Now, most of our audience is cringing in embarrassment that anyone would ever violate your privacy with such a thing as to try and strong-arm you for money. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, I don't know. I guess there are no limits anymore. Just everything's sort of slopping over the edges.
You know, when When people are now wanting to sue fast food companies because they ate too much and have eaten too much fast food, and they become obese and it's their fault, I think, and you know, I'm saying this with love because we obviously love people, and we do share our work, but I think we're at a mentality right now where too many people, it's not their fault they're in the situation they are. It's somebody's fault, and if they think somebody, you know, with money can somehow be pressured or sued or whatever, that's where they go now. Instead of saying, hey, you know, it's my fault I'm in this predicament, it's not my fault I'm too fat, it's my fault I've smoked cigarettes for 40 years, 10 packs a day.
That's not the way it works.
Blame someone else.
That's right. And as soon as you talk to someone about a problem, and now I want you all to listen carefully to conversations you have with people. Say somebody makes a mistake. Lord knows we all make mistakes. But if you're talking to someone about being fat, about screwing up at school or at work or whatever, watch and see how they construct their response or their interaction with you. You'll begin to hear pronouns. He, she, them, they, it's. In other words, which describe and point to other factors other than the individual, him or herself, who is truly responsible. As soon as you hear that, you know the person's not being realistic. This is the age of irrationality, certainly the age of non-accountability for most people.
Yeah, personal responsibility has to return. But again, I guess we'll wrap it up by saying, and I loved listening to the rebroadcast of the Jack Benny tribute the other night.
Oh, good.
Just as Jack Benny did not really have a vault in his house.
Or a Maxwell. Well, actually, he did have
a Maxwell. He did have a Maxwell, but only for display. Right. But he didn't actually go way down in a chamber where some poor man was guarding his money. Just as he did not really have a vault, we did not really have a castle. It's fun. It's pretend. Let's pretend. And we've been doing that. And I'm sorry that people took it seriously. Anyone who was offended by this or somehow they feel they're harmed by
Brad, no need to apologize. Come on, it's really blatantly obvious. This is, we've been having fun with this for a long time. And
yes, we have.
All right, so we've straightened that all out. And no more needs to be said. So next time, if I mention castle, all you folks who have any doubts now, don't anymore.
That's right.
Okay. Never mind that I live in a castle, too.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about that.
No.
Or my servants.
Family castle. Or your servants, right.
That's right. Or my drawbridge. See, Brad and I had this competition. Brad and Sherry would say theirs was bigger, and I said, no, my drawbridge is bigger. Well, theirs had two chains. Mine had three, and it just goes on and on.
And we had a gardener, and you didn't. But, you know.
Yeah, but I had, oh, never mind.
Yeah. It was all fun. It was all fun, folks. All fun and fantasy.
All right. I forgot to feed the servants today. Darn it! I throw them, every morning, I don't think any cruel. I do, I take a wheelbarrow out every morning, and I just give them all they can eat.
Yeah, well, I made a point of feeding Fred and Leonard before the show began.
All right. And but the point, there is a river in Winnebago. We don't want to make people think that we made that up.
No, we didn't make that up. The big and mighty W does surge near where we live, but it also surged through.
Yeah, but that's a long river.
It's a long river.
You know, the point of it is, don't go to Forest City looking for Brad and Sherry. You're not going to find them there. They actually, Iowa's a big state. We just want you to understand that. That's a locus that we use because it's a wonderful name. It could have been named something else. What was the other name?
Pucker Brush.
Say that again slowly.
Pucker Brush. Or Hill City.
Pucker Brush. Now.
And we did have fireworks. And you asked about those. We talked about those last time.
Pucker Brush.
And for the big Winnebago gathering, they come from all over.
Well, and there was really a Miss Winnebago, whatever the other word is.
I guess there was, yeah. So well,
we got to get bump. We're going to get bumper stickers when we bring out Steiger books, and we're going to reprint all your books. Each person who buys a Steiger book will get a bumper sticker that says, "Where in the heck is Pucker Brush?"
Yeah.
Pucker Brush. That, you know, I think if there are multiple dimensions.
Yeah.
Forest City is really named Pucker Brush
right.
on the next one over.
And in those multiple dimensions, we definitely have a splendid castle.
I hope so.
But not in this one, folks. Not in this one.
If there's any cosmic fairness, you do.
Indeed.
All right, we're going to take our break, and then when we come back, we will meet our special guest. Her name is Donna, and she has been through quite an ordeal, and we're going to hear it all together and hear from Brad, and as we always try to do, give Donna as much counsel and support as we can. And a little note for all of you, if you have something that's been bothering you for a long period of time or a short period of time and you have no one to talk to, not even your spouse, you can call us. We won't tell. It'll be a private conversation, and you'll be able to let it all out here. So we can do that later on with you if you'd like. 800-876-4123. I'm Jeff Rentz with Brad Steiger. Rentz.com for news, R-E-N-S-E.com. And thanks to those one or two souls who have been sort of mocking the website lately, thank you. We appreciate the publicity. If you can't take it, don't visit. We'll be back with Brad in just a few minutes. Proceed with hour number two, UFOs over the White House. 50 years ago, you can see that story and the photograph, number two position in headlines at Rentz.com. Take a look, share it with your friends, and try to remember what it must have been like back then. And it was amazing. Okay, we have Darlene on the phone, Brad, and she has lived a life of stress and turmoil, as it were. Darlene, are you there?
Hi, Darlene.
Hi, Brad. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. How long ago did this all start in your life? Go ahead and just start with the story. We'll be here listening and ask questions and see how it goes.
Okay. It all started in 93. My husband and I were looking for a house to buy, and we looked at this one, and he liked it immediately. And he kept insisting we buy this one, and he kept telling me how perfect it fit us, you know, three bedrooms, affordable, nice neighborhood, you know. And the first day we looked at it, I can remember I had this really weird feeling, but I couldn't explain it because I had no idea what was going on.
Uh-huh.
Well, I dismissed it because, you know, I thought it was just my nerves, you know. I'm nervous about buying our first house, you know.
Sure.
And we move in, and I hated it the very first day we moved in. My daughter and I, we began having these really bad dreams, you know.
How old was your daughter?
She was three at the time.
So when a three-year-old has bad dreams, that's something that a mom really notices.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because she would wake me up at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, crawl in bed with me, tell me her dream, you know, it was really scary.
What kind of things was she reporting to you? Do you remember?
She usually told me about a man who broke in the house and killed us, and, you know, it was always about death. There was something about death in almost every dream.
At three?
At three.
Okay.
Okay. Before we moved here, I'd never had a bad dream like that. I'd never had a dream about death, about dying, about me dying. And we just started having these really, really bad dreams. Well, I would wake up.
Excuse me, darling. Were you having similar sorts of dreams that your daughter is reporting to you? Any parallels?
Sometimes, yeah, we would have almost identical dreams.
What about your husband?
He didn't say anything about any dreams.
How like a
light you brought it up, did he say?
He didn't. Yeah, he wouldn't say. He didn't have dreams.
How
like we were
light.
Having.
Just snoring, sawing wood all night. He didn't. What does he know?
Right.
Let me ask you a question, Brad, about this. Obviously, Darlene is clearly sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband, obviously, in this case at least, not.
Or denying.
There was the next thing I was going to ask you. Or was he not sensitive? We'll follow this as we go. Go ahead. This is very interesting already.
Okay. Well, like I said, you know, I was always afraid. You know, you'd wake up. I would wake up paralyzed. I couldn't move. I was so afraid. And they were really vivid and I mean scary, to the point where you would wake up almost sweating because you were so afraid.
And always the same threat of death.
It's always the same.
Okay.
The death and the dying and mostly my death.
Good
my daughter plan. Will dream about my death. I will dream about my death.
Now it's one thing to dream about other people, but
right.
Now, how old a home was this at the time of your purchase, approximately?
Let's see, we bought it in 93, and it was built in 1929.
Okay, so it was getting ripe. Other people had lived in it,
right.
Picking up vibrations. Now, you said as soon as you walked in, you didn't like it. What was there about it?
I wasn't sure at that time, but there was something about it I just did not like.
Okay.
And I couldn't tell what it was. You know, I don't claim to be psychic or know things, you know, but it's something just doesn't, you know, when it doesn't feel right.
Did you tell your husband?
I really don't think he would have understood. You know, he wanted the house. He couldn't see beyond that.
Kind of sounds like it must be an ex-husband.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
Boy, you are a psychic, Brad. Amazing. All right, go ahead. That's right then and there, pretty obvious that it's kind of a rough match. Go ahead, Darlene.
Okay, like these dreams, you know, they were like every day, you know, you didn't have a break. You were constant. And then, you know, it was after probably about 6 months when they started backing off. And I would have like two or three a week. And then it would go, like, I went a whole month without having any dreams. I was like, yes. You know, it was a nice break.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the dreams, like I said, you know, one dream, the guy breaks in the house. I hear something, and I open my bedroom door, and I look, and I can see him coming towards me. And I see that he has a knife. And I slam my bedroom door, pull the dresser in front of it, grab the phone, and dial the police, okay, in this dream. And as I'm on the phone talking to the operator, the guy busts through my door and starts stabbing me. And when I wake up, before I wake up, I could feel myself dying in
you
this dream.
6 months of this every night?
Almost every single night.
Wow.
And I could actually feel like my spirit was leaving my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling the 911 operator, hurry. The guy... stabbing me.
Were you trying to explain this to your husband from time to time?
Yeah, and he wouldn't understand. You know, he'd just say, "Wow, you have a lot of dreams about death." I'm like, "Yeah."
Oh, good Lord. Hey. Ay, ay, all right.
Okay, all right. But is it the same man coming in every night in the dream?
No, it's different.
A different man?
He's always different.
Every time it was a different assailant?
Yeah. Every single time it was different.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad I asked that, because that kind of...
Yeah, it's not Freddy Krueger every time.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay,
one
this
must
is...
never assume.
That's
I
right.
was assuming it was the same dream over and over, but it's the same dream with a very interesting and probably meaningful variation, the assailant.
Right.
You know, the other dynamic of this, Brad, which I'm sure you're keyed on, but I want to point out to our listeners... is that here's a mother who is tormented almost beyond belief. This is a truly horrific
gosh.
Experience month after month. And every night you have to put your little girl in another room in a different part of the house and close her little door and then go into your bedroom. You had to be concerned about her.
She wouldn't
she's
sleep alone.
Her. She wouldn't.
She wouldn't sleep alone. She would sleep beside my bed.
I don't blame her at all. I mean, she'd come in and get on the floor?
She would either lay on the floor or lay in the bed.
Good grief.
All right.
She was scared.
You are totally under siege here. All right. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Then by August of 1993, my ex-husband, we were separated and getting a divorce. Well, he didn't want the house, and I didn't want the house. Okay, and I had no idea why. At that point, you know, I just thought, you know, I'm having these bad dreams for some reason, and I didn't know.
You didn't make any association between the house and the dreams?
No, I just thought it was really strange that my daughter was dreaming the same types of dreams I was.
That is strange.
You know, I mean, this is my very first experience with this kind of stuff, and I'm walking through it really slowly, trying to decipher what it all means.
Of course.
And so...
Well, Darlene, excuse me for interrupting here, but where are you getting support, or were you getting any from anyone, your mother,
no,
your father?
I couldn't tell anybody. They thought I was crazy.
Well, you're a very strong person, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, but anyway, we're separated, and we're arguing over this house. You know, he didn't want it. He would tell his lawyer, she can have it, and I would tell my lawyer, no, he can have it. So we're fighting, and then my lawyer calls me, and he says, we need to talk. You know, he goes, you know, we've been going through this for 4 months.
At somebody, $175 an hour.
Right. Somebody needs to take the house. You know, and I didn't care. I didn't want it. So finally I agreed. You know, he said, you know, just take it. You can sell it. You know, I thought, okay, that sounds simple.
Good advice.
And so I take it, and things seem to get worse from there.
Are you still living in the house?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And he's gone, and you're in there alone with your daughter.
Well, sort of.
Okay, all right.
I actually have two kids. My son, he doesn't dream like we do.
Okay.
But she's very sensitive to these things like I am, so she picks up a lot of that. Okay, so this takes us up to the night where I seen the ghost. It was like November of 93.
Same year then?
The same year.
Okay.
Okay, I get out of bed. It was like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, I'm fully awake, you know, to go to the restroom. And when I walk...
Hold on right there. That's a good place to pause. Go ahead and go to the
restroom. Music.
Yeah, go ahead and go to the restroom during the break, and we don't want to make you wait on that, so...
Okay.
We'll continue in just a couple of minutes as Brad and I hear Darlene's story. And just another one of those horrible things that people often keep repressed forever in some cases. We don't like that. We want you to talk about it like Darlene is doing tonight. Very graciously sharing, and we'll be right back with more after this. It's Brad Steiger Night, Lady Sherry listening along with us. To Darlene, telling her amazing story. Go right ahead. You're on your way to the restroom, November 1993.
Okay.
You're living alone in the house with your two kids, basically.
Right.
Yeah, all right, go on.
Okay. I walked into the kitchen, and the door that goes into the laundry room is, it's like a straight shot all the way through to the outside. You know, you go straight through, and the man... was standing right at the back door.
Inside or outside?
Inside. The door was shut. He was standing just inside the back door.
Now, you say the man, keeping in mind that you've seen a different man, basically, in every one of these horrible dreams.
Right.
So
this isn't a dream, though.
No, this isn't a dream.
I got it. But does this man click with any of your dreams when you see him? Okay.
Not up to this point.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, he's very large. He's probably, you know, I'm not good with heights and weights, but he was almost as tall as the door, which I would guess to be about 6 feet.
I cannot even conceive of how you felt. 2 a.m. going to the bathroom, you see a man in the house at
Did
the back
dream?
Door.
I knew he wasn't real. I don't know why I knew that.
Okay.
But I knew he wasn't real.
Okay.
But if he had been real, I would have been out the front door. You know?
Okay.
I knew he wasn't real.
Were the lights on, Darlene? How illuminated was the area he was standing in inside that back door?
It's pitch black there. With the kitchen light on that I leave on?
Yeah.
It's pitch black.
Okay.
But I could see every single detail of this man. So I don't know where the light was coming from, but it was not the light from the house.
He was solid.
He looked solid.
Yeah, very solid.
And we're talking 100% eye contact here.
Right. No, I could not see his eyes.
Ah.
I could not, he had a hat on, and it came, the shadow covered his eyes. I could only see his nose and mouth.
Mm. Okay. That's interesting.
Go ahead.
Okay. But anyway, he was huge, you know. He probably weighed probably 250. And, you know, he had this, like I said, the black hat, and he had a white dress shirt. It looked kind of new, like a nice shirt. He had black pants on. Well, over top, he had this big, long overcoat. I looked at pictures at the library, and nothing matched what the guy had on, except around the 1800s, you know, the late 1800s. I seen things that matched, but the hat didn't match those, and the coat didn't match that. You know, it was a different time. The clothes that he wore was from different time periods, I think.
Don't say the city, but what state do you live in?
Indiana.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay. So anyway, when I seen him, I wasn't afraid because I guess with all the dreams I was having, it just all kind of clicked all at once. And I thought, you know, I'm really not seeing this guy. You know, I'm thinking, you know, I'm working 60 hours a week, going through a divorce, raising two children, living alone, which I'd never done before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought I was losing my mind. I didn't think I was seeing somebody.
Okay, so you never thought for a moment, darling, that this was a real person?
Well, no. I looked right at him, and he looked solid, but I knew
even though
I couldn't...
he's solid, even though he wasn't translucent.
He wasn't.
Okay. Okay.
And I knew that he couldn't be real because
okay.
I wasn't afraid.
Okay.
That I seen him, I just, you know.
Well, as I said before, I think you're a very strong and brave person.
Okay, well, like I said earlier, I didn't tell anybody, you know, because if I'm thinking I'm going crazy, I can
okay.
only imagine.
All right.
How other people would see it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's the way a lot of people would see it.
Okay. Then a couple weeks after I seen this guy, you know, I dismiss it, like I said, thinking I'm just working too much.
Mm.
And a couple weeks later, my daughter, at this time, she was 4.
Mm-hmm.
She comes into my room around 5 o'clock in the morning telling me about her nightmare she had, which was common. It was almost an everyday thing.
So they kind of picked up again then after a little breathing spell.
Well, no, the dreams kept going.
Okay.
The dreams are constant, you know.
Oh, all right.
Even
I thought
to
you
this
said
day,
you had a little,
I still have them.
A little break there. I thought you said you had about a month when they didn't come.
Well, there was they're on and off through the whole, you know, for the whole 9 years that we've lived here.
Okay.
It's been mostly on, but
when you first moved in, it was like 6 solid weeks then every night.
Right. It was constant.
Okay.
For quite a while.
Okay.
Okay. Then, like I said, my daughter wakes me up and starts telling me about this dream she had. You know, and they always focused on somebody breaking in and killing us.
Mm.
Okay. Well, she didn't really go into details, except the man came in, and he decided not to kill us this time. But instead, he went to go into the basement to put a gun down there. And she explained that the man made her go with him so he could show her where he put this gun. Okay, you know, she's 4 years old. She's in her dream. I'm pretty sure hers was a dream because she said she actually went into the basement.
Okay.
And she could not open the basement door.
Right.
So I'm sure hers was a dream.
And she would have been unlikely to accompany a strange man to the basement.
Exactly.
Other than in a dream.
Right. Okay, so anyway, she was telling me he put it downstairs.
The gun.
Yeah, he had a gun.
And you put it downstairs.
There's in our basement, it's like one room under the kitchen. You know, the old houses have like
okay.
little...
So it's not a full basement?
No. Like one little cellar
mm-hmm.
type
mm-hmm.
area.
Okay, so was this a handgun?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so the gun is allegedly now under the kitchen.
Right.
What happens next?
Okay, well, she explained to me exactly where he put it, and he put it on what we call the shelf. We have no idea what it is. We just call it the shelf because it's a flat surface, and it's like a half wall that's filled with dirt and concrete. it's about 3 feet tall, you know, it's about 3 feet wide, about 7-8 feet long. And it just...
In the basement?
In the basement. It just sits there, you know. My friends, you know, they told me, break it down, see what's behind it, you know.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
yeah.
I don't want to know what's behind it.
You may not.
I know I may not.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of eerie down there anyway. I don't go down there.
Are you're still in the house?
Yeah.
And that wall, that thing is still sealed off?
Right.
Hey, Brad.
Yeah. Now, this is an incredible...
You're not too far from Indiana, are you?
This is an incredible case.
It seriously looks like the size of a coffin. It seriously does.
It's 3 feet wide and 7 feet long and 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
Hey, Brad. Indiana's not too far away.
No, it's not. And hopefully
we'll
be... Get
a video camera. Let's get on over there.
Hopefully we'll be going that direction in not too long a time.
All right, Darlene.
Okay. So anyway, the night after she had this dream, I picked them up from daycare, and, you know, she's 4 years old. She's still talking about this dream after 8 hours.
So it really impressed her. There's a gun in the basement.
Right. You know, she was so persistent because she knew, you know, her dad had had guns in the house, and I always made him keep them locked up or, you know, out of the house.
So she didn't know what a handgun looked like. Other
right.
Than
she just knew it was a gun.
Pardon me?
She just knew it was a gun. She had no idea what kind or anything.
Oh, okay, okay.
And she was panicked because she knew I didn't like guns.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's thinking, I've got to get Mom to go in the basement to get this gun before somebody gets hurt.
Okay.
So she's still talking about it, and I'm just frustrated with hearing the same story. So I say, okay, let's go in the basement. She's like, I'm not going down there.
And you're probably eager to go down there.
Well, no.
Teasing.
We don't go down there.
Okay.
Okay, so anyways, I was starting to walk her down the steps into the basement, and she was, like, grabbing on to me. So I ended up having to carry her down the stairs.
She was that frightened.
She was so scared. She had her head buried in my shoulder.
Okay.
She wouldn't even look.
And yet she insisted on going down.
Right. She knew the gun was down there, and she wanted me to get it, but yet I think she was afraid the guy was still down there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What a brave little girl.
Yeah.
Brave mama and girl.
Yeah, yeah.
So we go down there, and she's got her head buried in my shoulder. She won't look until I tell her there's nothing there. And she looks at the shelf, and she says, it was right there. She said, he must have come back and moved it after I went back to bed. So it was so real to her that she thought, you know, he's been back and he's moved it somewhere else. Okay, so we went back upstairs and I told her, I said, you know, there's nothing there. You know, I told her, you dreamed about the man, you know, and no matter how real they seemed, you dreamed it and it's not real. So she kept talking about it. And I finally said, do you remember what the man looked like? And she explained to me, she in detail, she told me this man was huge. He had a hat that covered his eyes. He had a white shirt, black pants, a big long coat, really big hands. You know, I said, how big? She said, I don't know. You know, to a four-year-old, how big is big?
Right.
She goes, I don't know. I said, was he bigger than Grandpa? Oh, yeah, he was a lot bigger. You know, so I kind of... You know, I took her to the door, and I said, was he this tall? No. Was he this tall? No. Well, he was exactly the same height and sounded exactly the same as the man I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at this point, I'm kind of starting to freak out.
But yet you'd never seen that man in a dream.
Never. Well, no, not in a dream.
All right. Please continue.
Okay, so at this point, I go to the library, and I pull out my deed and abstract to my house, and I write down every name of every owner that ever owned the property from the time, you know, Andrew Jackson signed it over to the first man from the United States government.
It goes back that far where you are?
Yeah. Yeah, the deed actually has Andrew Jackson's signature on it, you know.
Interesting.
Okay.
Just so our listeners are staying with you, the deed to what?
To the property.
Not the house.
Not the house.
Clear on that.
The actual property.
So
anyways, the lady at the historical room at the library, she was really curious, you know. I go in there with a list of names and looking up information on my property, you know. So she was like, you know, why are you doing this? And I told her about the man that I had seen and about my daughter's dream and, you know, different, you know, having scary dreams and stuff. So she starts helping me. And
she didn't laugh.
Huh?
She didn't laugh.
No,
Okay.
Not at all. I thought, you know, she was just going to, like, roll her eyes and walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's another kook in here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't. You know, she starts helping me.
Oh, there's that darn music again.
Okay, all right. Wow.
We're just getting going.
It's just like sitting down at a great feast, though. You have to take individual bites, remember, Brandon?
All right.
You can't just pour it all down.
Okay, so we're at the library, and we're looking through, you know, copies of old city records, books, newspapers, trying to find something that would link this man to this house or the property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we couldn't find anything that really made any sense. And the lady told me, she said, do you know there used to be a cemetery about a block or a block and a half from where your house is?
Used to be.
Used to be. They dug them up and moved them somewhere. And she said, well, maybe, you know, if they didn't get all the graves, you know, it might be somebody from there. You know, I didn't really give that a lot of thought because I thought, well, if I'm seeing him, then all my neighbors would probably be seeing something too, you know.
Not necessarily.
No. Okay, so anyway, and plus the cemetery was moved in the 50s or the 60s, and the house was built in the, you know, 1929.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that thing is in the basement, if that's what it is, then, you know, it was way before that that the house was built, or way after that that they moved the cemetery. Okay, and then the only other thing that even caught my attention was a man whose name was Grayston, who owned the land from 1880 to 1888, whose daughter died mysteriously. They had no idea. The lady just, you know, she was a historian, so she knew the name, and she knew.
Died mysteriously.
Yeah, she didn't know how.
At what age?
I think she said around 7 or 8. Somewhere before 10. I'm not really sure, but I know it was.
Okay. And not a disease, not an illness?
No, she like murdered or
seriously.
Something.
Like murder, maybe.
But yeah, they found her dead.
Okay.
And they had no idea how she died.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, after this Grayston moved out, the house sat empty until 1914. And then it was owned by a couple different people after that. And then the man who actually built the house owned it for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he lived here for 40 years.
Okay.
But all the way up until he bought the house, or bought the land, until he moved out, nobody has owned the property for more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're coming up on our 10th year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're unsure who this man really is.
Right.
But most of the strange things happen in the kitchen. So that's where I focused all of my, you know.
Now is the basement and the shelf, is that kind of right below the kitchen area?
The basement and the shelf are below two bathrooms, the furnace, and the kitchen.
The furnace is on the first floor rather than in the basement?
Right.
Okay.
But it's the furnace and the bathrooms are directly above the shelf.
Okay.
All right, now you're coming up on 10 years.
Right.
It seems like the more intense activity occurred early on. What's the current status?
Well, right now, it's just basically I can still sense them, and I know they're there.
You're saying plural now.
They, yeah.
Them.
Them. Mm-hmm. Well, after we've seen the man, we've realized there's a lot more than one.
Have you seen more than one?
Yeah. Yeah, I have.
Was the cemetery in fact where your house is currently located at some point in time? Were you able to ascertain that? Did people perhaps fib about that long ago to make the property more palatable to developers?
I am not sure. I don't think it reached all the way over here.
Okay. All right.
But anyway.
That doesn't mean there weren't people buried there at one time, though.
Right. Okay, so after we seen the man and after I did the research on the house, then I started sensing and feeling different things. You know, I'd walk into the kitchen and I'd walk through a cold spot. You know, at first I had no idea what this cold spot was, but the temperature dropped. You could actually feel it.
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't feel that before, darling.
Yeah, I didn't. And if I did, I didn't recognize it.
Okay, or didn't pay any attention to it.
Right. You know, but when I first started recognizing it, you know, I was thinking, you know, that's a draft. I wasn't making
sure,
the connection.
Sure.
And, but when I would walk through it, you know, I'd be like through it and out, I say out the other side because that's what it felt like. You know,
mm-hmm.
It felt like there was something there.
That is what it feels like. Okay, these other entities, were they male or female?
I've seen children.
Oh, you have seen now.
I have
just
seen.
Just feel.
Right.
Okay.
I've seen actually only three little children.
Three little children.
Right. And I've only seen them twice. And
did,
it was.
Did they look like they were siblings or?
They were. You know how like little kids run and skip and.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they were doing. And it was like I was sitting in the recliner watching TV, and all of a sudden. These three little kids go whistling and skipping in front of me.
How were they dressed?
They, the one girl that I noticed most, she was the only one that looked at me. She was in the middle.
She looked at you?
She looked right at me. She was probably...
You're giving me goose pimples.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
When you say they were whistling
and
skipping...
I'm sorry, I interrupted her, Jeff. She was just going to say how she
okay.
was dressed.
Oh, go ahead.
She had a little white frilly dress on, you know, kind of like she was going to church or...
Okay, like again, 1880s or so.
Right. Yeah, it was an older style,
uh-huh.
White. You know, it was probably like right above her knees.
The whistling and skipping, were they making thump thump on the floor? This is a three-dimensional experience, or was it...
It was more like an apparition.
Okay.
It wasn't solid like the other guy.
Okay.
It was just kind of like... I seen them, and it was, like, real quick.
How long were they in view? One set, 1,001, 1,002, how long?
How long?
Yeah, how long
probably
were they
about,
in view?
Probably about 2 seconds? I would guess probably around 10 seconds.
Okay.
That's a long time.
All right.
They kind of started, like, in the middle of my living room, and they were just going really slow, and they disappeared into the kitchen.
Now, when you said the girl looked at you, did she stop and look at you?
No, she was going with them, and she was smiling, and you could tell they were happy.
Uh-huh. But did she turn and look at you?
Yeah. Yeah, she turned her head.
So she seemed aware of your presence?
Right. And she knew that I seen her.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
I know it all sounds crazy.
No, it doesn't sound crazy at all.
Okay, but anyway, I'm sitting there. I see them go by, and that happened twice like that.
Twice.
Almost the exact same scenario.
A little tableau for you there. A little scene kind of being played out for you.
Right, yeah, kind of like I was watching a little movie. And
mm-hmm.
It was just, yeah, okay. So anyway, by this point, I really think I'm going crazy. And I'm thinking something is nuts here, you know. So, trying to remember where I'm at here.
The three kids skipping?
Three kids skipping.
Okay.
How long ago that was, and sequencing moving forward now?
Okay, that was probably in 96, probably in the spring of 96.
So you've been there over 3 years then, or right at 3 years?
Right. But see, in between all this time was when I was feeling the cold spots, feeling them touch me and the odors. I could smell the odors.
Oh, yeah. What kind of odors?
Sometimes it was, like, really flowery.
I was just going to say, like, flowers.
Perfumey, you know, perfume smells.
Like flowers at a funeral?
Well, actually, it was more like, yeah. I don't want to think of it like that, but yeah. And the other smell was just like rotten, worse than rotten.
Oh.
You know, and I was thinking, you know, what is this smell? You know, and like the cold spots, I had no idea when I first started smelling it what it was.
I was always pick flowers over rotten smells.
Yeah, well, they kind of different ones. You know, I'd sense different smells and or smell different things and.
So flowers, kind of a rotten smell. What else, darling?
It was like I don't know when I
Hello?
Would smell the smell.
I'm sorry, you blipped out there.
Oh, I heard a click.
Yeah, I did too.
We're okay. We're okay.
Ever anything like ozone or?
One time it was like it may have been more than once. It was like a fresh rainy.
Okay,
smell.
Like ozone, like
I don't know what
a lot of negative ions coming around.
Like you're in an electrical storm and you have an unusual smell.
Right, that's very significant. Very significant.
Yes, yeah. Sometimes they range from all different smells.
Yeah, well that's.
I mean, they're hard to describe because I've never smelled something
of course.
They smell like.
Well, you're doing a great job. You're doing a wonderful job.
Okay, but anyway, I'll go back to the cold spots.
Mm-hmm.
When I would walk through them, I would always get, the shivers. I would always shiver, and I would always feel nauseated.
Uh-huh.
Almost
right.
Always felt
right.
Like I was going to get sick.
Very typical.
And when, you know, it would be like sometimes I would turn around and as soon as I turned around, I would walk right through it like it was standing right behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And those always give me the goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
But I started avoiding the certain spots where I would sense them at, feel them at. And
they were pretty stationary then, these cold spots.
At first.
Oh, okay.
And then they started moving around.
Oh, Darlene.
Yeah.
She's got it all.
Yeah.
It's all wrapped up in that one little house.
Mainly in the kitchen. But
can't wait till we go down with a video camera.
No, I think we should. I really think we should.
It can be scary.
Yeah, Brad Steiger and I and Darlene telling us a tale that few people would put up with for nearly 10 years, and somehow she has done it. Wisdom, courage, strength. Just some of the elements involved with toughing it out. Darlene, why have you toughed it out this long? We'll get back to the story, but there are a lot of people wondering, what are you still doing there?
Because every time I talk about selling it, something happens.
Like, okay, all right, we'll get to that. I can see that's coming. We'll put that off for now then. All right, folks, you know, those of you who have been wondering, there is a reason. Go ahead with your story now.
Okay, the first time I ever actually felt it touch me, I was sitting at the kitchen table reading the newspaper. And my arm was flat against the table, and I felt this cold feeling go all the way from my wrist up to my elbow. And I guess the only way I can describe it is, you know, when you're a kid and you take a balloon and you rub it against your hair and you can feel your hairs, like, standing up. And
electromagnetic again.
Right. Okay. That's how it felt. But it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, you know, it not only gives me the shivers and made me nauseated, I felt like I was literally chilled to the bone. Mm-hmm. I was shaking and I was very nauseated. And, I mean, at this point, I'm starting to get mad because I'm thinking, you know, these things are driving me crazy. I didn't know, you know, I mean, here they are walking through my house wherever they want to go and freaking me out whenever they feel like it. And so I started to get mad at this point. And then there was another day when I was sitting at the table. See, they all happen in the kitchen, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the power place, isn't it?
I felt something like, you know, how it would feel if somebody just ran past you really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Your hair moves.
Mm-hmm.
You feel the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in my kitchen, there is no direct airflow from any windows or outside doors, you know. Doesn't go through there like that.
Oh.
I'm sitting there, and I feel this thing whiz past me. My hair moves, and I, you know, at this point, I'm able to sense them. I know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can sense the energy or whatever it is that they emit. I don't know.
Did you hear anything when something went by your head, or was it just your hair ruffled a little bit? And
it was just like a, you know, like.
You heard the air move, in other words.
Yeah, it wasn't really like a sound. I guess, you know.
Have you ever seen any little white or other colored orbs or dots moving around the house?
Not that I know of, because I always leave lights on.
Okay. Well, they can be seen with lights on, too. But
can they?
Yeah.
That's
maybe
a good idea. Leave those lights on.
Yeah. Okay, and then there's times where I can, you know how you feel someone staring at you and you look over and you see them staring at you? That's how it feels. I feel somebody staring at me.
That's a good description.
And, you know, I mean, I know there's nobody else around.
But you're aware.
And I'm aware that somebody or something is staring at me.
Or you sense someone.
Right. Okay. Then there was one night where I was in bed, and I wasn't asleep. You know, here I am having trouble sleeping anyway. And I felt,
why?
And I felt somebody sit on the end of my bed.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I was afraid to look.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I always keep this little nightlight on at the side of my bed.
Right.
And I looked, and there was nobody there, but it was still too dark to see if there was an imprint in the bed. But now this takes us up to the talking doll.
Talking doll.
A talking doll. My daughter got it for Christmas one year. She was, I don't know, she's probably 7 or 8, so this was
one of those that 96. Say, hi, I'm Debbie, your play friend, or something like
actually,
that.
Actually, it just says, pick me up, mommy, I love you, do it again,
okay.
And it giggles.
Okay.
Okay, so she's got this doll in her room, and her friend, she had a friend over, and they were in her room, and I hear this scream. I mean, it's one of those blood-curdling screams.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately jump up, go to the stairway door, and I see these two girls practically flying down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And when I finally got them calmed down, I said, you know, what is the matter, you know? And my daughter was saying, the doll is talking. I'm like, of course it's talking. That's what it's supposed to do. You know, and she says, the batteries were not in the doll. They were laying on the floor beside it.
What was the doll saying?
It was just, I don't know. I honestly don't know what it actually said.
Was it saying what it was programmed to say or something else?
I'm really not sure. They were so scared.
If it was saying what it was programmed to say, then you're getting a demonstration, of course, of the energy in the house. Demonstrating, you know, again, the electromagnetic capacity of being able to make the doll play whether the battery's in or not.
Right. You know, and when I told her, you know, I said, of course, you know, it's going to play the batteries, you know. She was, like, looking at me strange, like, Mom, the batteries were not even there, you know.
That's tough to explain that away, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Yeah.
It certainly is.
That's quite a story. You might ask her at some point if this is an approachable subject. Do you remember when the doll talked?
Yeah,
did it say she doesn't?
She does remember.
Okay, well, you might ask her and see what she relates to you, if it was the pre-recorded message in the doll or some kind of stock market summary or something.
You know, yeah. Or something.
Yeah. That's all right, Mom.
Hang on, I just asked her.
Oh, she's there.
Oh,
she's
great.
There, yeah.
You know,
she said it said exactly the same thing, but you know how I said it giggled?
Yeah.
She said it laughed like it's never laughed before.
Okay.
Does she want to tell us about that? You don't have to put her on the spot, but now kids do sometimes come on here and if she wants
to. Oh, yeah, but I mean,
does she want?
She would tell the story if you wanted her to tell it.
I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, I would too.
You want to tell your story about your doll?
Say Uncle Brad and Uncle Jeff are here.
Uncle Brad and Uncle Jeff. They do a radio show, and I'm telling them our story. Yeah, it's not your uncle.
No, not really. And Brad doesn't live in a castle either.
Yeah, I heard that. Is he even in Iowa? Because I've been to Iowa, and I know there's nothing in Iowa.
There are no castles here.
I don't know if she's going to tell. I wish she would. But...
Okay.
Well, just if she say, just ask her, do you want to tell Jeff and Brad, there's nobody else listening, does about your story?
Okay. She went to the bathroom.
All right. Well, all right.
Carry on.
Okay, but anyway, she also said that it said, I'm going to get you.
Okay.
All right, now that I want to hear.
Okay.
If she comes back, I'd like to hear it, just because it might be good for her to tell somebody about that, too. I don't know.
Right.
But we'll see.
It's up to her.
Okay. Should we stick with the doll story or just go on?
Well, I want to hear why every time you're ready to move, you can't.
Okay. Well, the one time we were talking about selling the house and the furnace blew.
Mm-hmm.
The firewall in the furnace, you know, furnaces aren't cheap.
Right.
You're looking at $2,000 almost
every time. Yeah.
Okay, and every single time we seriously talk about putting the house up for sale, something seems to happen.
You have to put the money into repairing it rather than putting it up for sale.
Right. You know, I mean, who's going to buy a house that needs a new furnace or a tree fell on it or...
Mm-mm.
You know,
a tree did fall on us?
A tree at Memorial Day of this year.
Sounds like they don't want her to leave, but...
No. She has passed all the initiations they've set for her.
Now she's part of the family now.
Oh my gosh.
And they love her.
That means good things, though, basically.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Now, Brad is the pro, but it sounds, Brad, that she's out of... She's out of danger in terms of any more terrible, horrible ordeals. They're kind of family now.
Now, first of all, those dreams of death.
Right.
Dreams of death seldom mean physical death. They mean it's time for a change. It's time you did something new in your life. And they probably were suggesting the divorce. They probably, you know, on one conscious level were accelerating that or some change.
Cosmic marriage counseling you were getting.
And the fact that, you see, it was a series. It was telling you over and over and over, you know, you have to put an end.
Hmm.
You have to put a death to this and start something new. It wasn't until after that and after he moved out that you saw an actual physical manifestation. Now... They put you through... Now, if you had been a true believer in all of the paranormal, you could have been in serious difficulty, but you're a courageous, down-to-earth person, and you've weathered all the initiations. They love you.
All right, stand by, if you will. We'll take our break and come right back and continue with Darlene's amazing Life and Times. You know, I was thinking, Brad, and my producer mentioned this, sometimes people are buried, little girls will be buried in their prettiest dresses and so forth, and like the little girl in the white dress.
We'll get to that when the music stops.
Yeah, I figured you might.
Let's come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to say something really fast.
Sure.
Because I said they love her. Now, I want to quickly say, but please, Darlene, don't try to start communicating them. Don't try to be John Edward. Don't try to be James von Prague. Don't take out the Ouija board. No, just what you have, you've been given proof that the spirit world, the unseen world, is very near and all around us. And because of your being a down-to-earth, solid, courageous person, you've been, except I think you moved into what was like a vortex area, like an opening between worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, if you hadn't believed, it might have been too much for you. If you had really been a true believer, it might have been too much for you. But the kind of down-to-earth, honest person you are, you've achieved a balance.
I think they knew, Brad, I'm suggesting this, that they knew she was real serious about things, a quality person, when she went to the library and started to do the research.
Right.
That would have been a real key.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, darling.
Okay. Well, it wasn't always really easy to accept me. I can tell you that.
No.
Okay. I'm going to tell you this story, and it's more crazy than any of them that I've told you so far.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay. One night I'm laying in bed, tossing and turning, unable to sleep, you know. The nightmares are right there, you know.
Same?
Same, yeah. Constant.
Is this back in the early 90s then?
This is in the earlier, this is probably around 95, 96. It probably fits right in there around the doll thing.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm laying there in bed, and I'm laying on my back, and I feel these two large, cold hands slip around my neck. It was really fast. I didn't even have time to move or react. And they began pushing down and squeezing my neck, like just like they were strangling me. And my head was so far into the pillow was wrapped up each side of my head. That's how far my head was down into this pillow. I was scared to death. At first, I was so frightened, and I couldn't move.
Yeah, well, there's been a siphoning process. In other words, there probably have been mischievous entities there. There may even have been some negative entities there, but I think there's been a siphoning process over the year.
That's a pretty bad pathology to encounter. Let me hear the rest of this.
Okay.
Please.
Then I realized, you know, at this point, this thing was not going to stop until I was not breathing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started kicking and squirming, but I couldn't move the upper part of my body.
Mm-hmm.
It was like my arms were held down from my elbows up, and this thing was gripping my neck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pushing down, and I wasn't breathing. And I'm trying to force myself to sit up, but my feet keep slipping on the sheets. I couldn't push hard enough. I didn't have nothing to push against to sit up. And I'm laying here feeling completely helpless, you know. And, you know, the whole thing probably lasted 2 minutes. And I'm sitting here recalling in my mind all these dreams about death,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I'm thinking, that was what this thing wanted to do. You know, it must be my time, and,
mm-hmm,
you know, I am going to die at the hands of something I cannot see,
mm-hmm,
you know. And then, you know, I started getting angry, and I said, you know, in my mind, I'm screaming at this thing because, you know, I can't talk, I can't breathe. So I'm screaming, let me go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, as quick as it started, it instantly stopped.
Right, that's your resilience again.
Okay.
You said exactly the right thing.
You know, and I immediately sat up, you know, and I'm gasping and choking, you know, the air's refilling my lungs, and I get up from my bed, and I'm mad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beyond mad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I started screaming out loud. And I said, you know, you don't plan on leaving. I don't either. I said, so let's get this straight. You know, you stay out of my way. I'll stay out of yours. You know, if we're all going to live here, we have to do it in peace.
Perfect.
You know, and I said, now get out of my room. I'm going to bed.
Perfect.
I was mad.
Perfect.
You know, and I think what I had to do was finally prove to them or him,
mm-hmm,
or whoever,
mm-hmm,
it was,
mm-hmm,
that I wasn't afraid of them. I'm not saying I'm going to go chasing them.
No.
I'm just saying I wasn't afraid of them, and I was not afraid to die. You know,
Well, you took away all their power.
You stood up on your hind legs as a strong human being, and you declared yourself. You declared your sovereignty. You declared what you are, and you drew the line. You said it perfectly.
You know, it was like after this, you know, they kind of eased off.
They respected you.
Well, Brad, would it be, let's say there are a number of these entities, would this just be one particular bad one, or are they acting in a collective sense?
Well, I think here again, that, like I said, there's kind of a siphoning process here, and Darlene's experiences, I mean, you could write an entire book about it. I mean, she's just
people
had the gamut. Well, you've had the gamut and extraordinary experiences. And again, what's so perfect about this, you know, beginning with the dreams, like, what did Jeff say, cosmic advice?
Cosmic marriage counseling.
Marriage counseling. And then proceeding. Now, again, I think there's just so many things here. And the fact, again, the eye contact is an extraordinary situation and haunting.
Did you, Darlene, we have to take a break. Did you have any bruises on your neck? any marks?
No, no. I didn't have any signs.
There could have been, couldn't there, Brad?
Yeah, but I think it was, again, a psychic demonstration of power. I think it was mind. Physical mind versus cosmic mind, and she asserted herself. She asserted her humanity, her humanhood.
They met their match.
That's right.
All right. A pretty horrific experience in and of itself. You did the right thing, as Brad wisely counseled. You're going on instinct, and that's something that you have working for you that a lot of people don't anymore. They're confused. You've got it, though. You're a very well glued together young lady, as they say.
The most powerful tool we have is the human voice and the human will. We have the power to declare ourselves. Just as you did, darling, we have the power to declare our sovereignty. Now, we should never challenge the unseen and the unknown, but we declare our sovereignty. And as you said, this is the way it is. You did exactly the right thing.
Did you have any more with that particular story?
No, that was all. That was enough.
That's enough. Okay, and actually, the idea of writing a book on this is not without merit, obviously. And if you ever had time or the inclination, I think it's something you should explore. It's a true story, and
sit down with a tape recorder.
Sure, just sit down and start talking. You take this program. You can get a copy of it right off the internet anytime you want. Just record it and use that as a. An aid, if you will.
Outline.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. I'm sure there's much more to it. So go ahead and tell us more if you'd like. I'm sure we've got time. So.
Okay. All right. This is, I'm not sure if it was 95 or 96, but I had a male friend, and he moved in with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been friends for 5 years, you know. Before that.
Okay.
I never confided in him the things that was going on.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah. So anyway,
they might not like him coming into the house.
They don't.
How did I guess?
They don't. Okay. It was just like he came and within the first week he says this house is haunted. I mean, you know, it took me a few months to realize, you know, that it was whatever it is, and he knew like right away.
Yeah, he was a little quicker than your ex-husband.
Right, yeah.
Well, and the phenomena had progressed, too.
Right, it was basically at the peak, you know, so he would tell me, you know, can't you smell that? And I would act stupid, like, no, what do you smell? You know, just because I wanted to get him to describe the things
right,
to me.
Right.
And he would tell me, you know, he senses this, and he feels cold spots, and he smells the smells. And he was telling me this, trying to convince me something that I already knew, but I just was kind of playing him a little bit to see exactly.
Well, you were seeking validation. That's fine.
Right. Instincts of an investigator.
Right. So I would just give him the, oh, really? That's strange, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So one night we're sitting up and we're talking, and it was probably around 1 o'clock, and suddenly we hear and see, I mean, you could actually see the blinds moving. It sounded like somebody was standing on the outside of the window pounding on the window or the wall, and it was so loud and so it was so intense, you know, there was no mistaking that pounding. And you know, he jumps up, you know, and the whole time I'm acting like I have no idea what's going on. Okay. So we start hearing this pounding and seeing the blind shaking. And he jumps up, pardon my language, but he says, no ghost my ass. He jumps up, runs outside of the door, runs all the way around the house. He comes back in and he says, now tell me there's no ghost here.
That's funny. What a funny story. You got to do a book on this. That's a great bit. You had him completely, absolutely at a disadvantage. He had no idea you knew all about this.
Right.
He's trying to prove it to you.
Right.
And there's
his
proof.
He's trying to convince me. Okay. So this wasn't it. It would play tricks on him.
Well, you're lucky he didn't keep running. He came back in the house.
Right.
That was encouraging.
Right.
Well,
he didn't look at his feet.
He was going over the hill.
Remember that? You look at his feet. Feet Do your thing. I'm out of here.
So anyway, the whole time he stayed.
And you didn't have to chain him or anything, right?
No.
It was voluntary.
No, he wasn't afraid of it. He just knew it was here.
He wanted you to acknowledge it.
He wanted to show me what he was seeing.
Right.
Did you give in?
Yeah, I did. I had to at that point.
Well, by the way.
So he was like, I knew you weren't telling me the truth, you know. But I really didn't mean to lie. I just wanted to know what he was seeing and sensing.
Jeff said you were getting validation.
Right.
Because if you just said, yes, yes, you hear it too.
Right.
It could have gone a whole different direction.
Right. So anyway.
That's an interesting response that he would jump up and actually run all the way around the house to check it out.
He jumped up, ran straight out the door.
Huh.
And all the way around the house said, there was nobody out there. Now tell me there's no ghost, you know?
That's funny. That's a great one.
So anyway, it would hide his car keys. We would look, and his car keys would be one spot.
Christ,
we would go somewhere together. We'd come back, and they wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I thought, well, that's strange. How could they just move?
Right.
Okay? So anyway, one day, this was the funny part. One day we come home, and his house slippers he always left beside his bed. We come home, his house slippers are neatly placed by the back door. Okay, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I'd be taking this as an invitation to leave.
Yeah.
You know?
That is neat. That is a great story.
You know, none of that has ever happened to me. You know, my stuff is, you know, usually where I leave it, but his, it just seemed to always...
Very funny. They wanted him out. They're banging on the wall or putting his slippers by the door, moving the car keys around. That's very funny.
Right.
You know, and I mean...
Okay, I know there's a lot more. Go ahead. Don't stop. This is great.
Okay, so anyway, he moves out and things kind of...
He left.
He left.
And I don't mean to probe, but what was the reason he actually left? Did the relationship kind of just run its course? Phenomenon play
right.
A key role in
we're
it.
No longer friends, you know, things just
would you if you had the point, would you point at the phenomenon as being the primary reason?
No, but I think it drove him pretty crazy.
Alright, so when you drive down the street you still see him running around houses. Never got over that.
Looking for his
slippers. Still looking. That's right. What color were the slit? They weren't, never mind. All right. Don't tell me they were pink.
No.
Okay. The story.
Yeah.
Continuing
phenomenon. I just took out the biggies.
Say again?
I said I just took out the big, the big experiences. I didn't, you know, really go into a lot of detail on everything,
But the phenomena doesn't
matter.
Are there any more big ones you want to relay, or do you want to kind of bring us up to the current time with the status of things?
Okay.
Now right. Is.
Okay. We'll go up to 2000. Okay, I remarried in September of 2000.
Congratulations.
And
with full disclosure, I hope.
Yeah.
Okay. And my husband does not sense them, see them, smell them, hear them, or
back
anything.
Back to the first guy.
Well.
Almost.
Yeah, because I don't understand why I'm seeing these things and nobody else is, except my daughter sometimes.
Denial, Brad. People don't have time for that, unless it's in their face.
No.
Okay, so we assume things are going okay.
Right, sort of. We have a dog, okay? And I don't know if dogs can sense things, but I'll tell you the... experience that we had with her, we've had several times. Okay, she's a year old. We named her Angel, of all things.
Mm-hmm, good name.
Okay, so one day she walks into the kitchen, she's growling and she's barking and she's looking up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she's snarling. You know how a dog reacts if you are threatening to hit it?
Mm-hmm.
It lunges forward and jumps back and lunges forward like it's biting somebody. Okay, she did this, and I'm sitting here. I mean, the whole thing was pretty frightening to watch,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm watching as she is doing this, and all of a sudden, she whimpered like she was hit, And she runs over to the other side of the living room, lays down, and keeps watching that spot, and she's growling and snarling still.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I saw that happen with our dog when we moved into a house that had a lot of phenomena exactly the same, the lunging, the growling, and the confusion, and those who could just say, well, the dog's imagining things, or the dog's
snarling. No,
especially the whimpering and the cowering and the charging. I mean, they're seeing something there.
Well, are they actually seeing it, or are they hearing it so acutely that they're seeing it? In other words, they're not actually visualizing it, but they're hearing it, they know it's there, and that hearing is, what, 10,000 times more astute than ours?
Well, that could very well be. That could very well be, because their eyesight is not probably as good as ours, but their hearing, like you say, is 100,000 times better. So they're either seeing or hearing, but they certainly are perceiving something there.
But she does. She does that, and she sticks with me. You know, she's like my dog.
Mm-hmm.
She stays right beside me most of the time, and she just always hangs out with me. I'm not sure why, but she's just always there.
She's your angel.
Well, she must be.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got the whole thing. You know, the leaky pipes, the $90 water bill. We're working on our third furnace.
Well, your husband, you've explained this to him, I'm sure.
Right. And he believes me.
Okay. There's no problem with him accepting it as your reality. It's just not his.
Right. He doesn't see it. He doesn't hear it. He doesn't sense the things.
Well, and Brad, excuse me, darling, but wouldn't it be to their advantage to keep him in the dark, so to speak, to further try to polarize, to drive him out? The two of them, by not letting him see or not manifesting themselves to his powers of persuasion. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Trying to play Darlene and her husband against each other.
I hope not.
I mean, that's a, you know, these as you've said for so many years, these people on the other side, whatever they are, don't always act with our best interests. And certainly in this case, we have ample evidence that there have been some pretty strange shenanigans. Now, the guy who was in there for the short period of time with the bedroom slippers.
Right.
Seems like they knew they couldn't play around with him. He saw right through them, or so to speak.
Or acknowledged them immediately. Yeah.
But it would seem in this case that perhaps either there is denial or a combination of denial and a lack of manifestation. Maybe they're... Have you felt that they'd like him gone too?
I have felt that they have pretty much accepted him.
Okay, he's kind of like a bump on the log then. They're going to leave him alone.
Right, yeah, he poses no threat to them.
Well, because you are the center of the attention. And
I don't understand why that is.
Well, because...
Brad, explain that now.
Yeah.
Be careful. Listen to what he said. This is important. Because of who you are, the kind of person you are, you're an extraordinary person in their world, so to speak. They don't come across people like you very often. You measure up.
You passed the test, the initiation, because of your strength and your courage. You declared yourself. You stood up with that powerful tool of the human voice, declared yourself. You drew the line. You have established peace. You said, what did you say? I want peace, and we have to respect one another. So that's what you have. And probably then, because of you, they have accepted your husband.
Right.
Because they know that the energy source and the respect that they have from you, that you have built on over a period of time with mutual respect, that's the important thing. That's the determining factor.
Right. See, I can still sense them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can still walk through the kitchen and know that they're there.
Right, but it's simply an acknowledgement.
Right.
You're not falling on your knees, or you're not taking out the Ouija board, you're not trying to communicate, and that would be a big mistake.
You don't even have to mention this part, because I've never touched them.
Good. Let me ask a question here.
Good.
We have about 5 minutes left. At this point, almost 10 years, you mentioned that it seems in the past everyone who's been in the house has lasted about 10 years. What are your plans? Do you have any plans to move? Do you want to move? Or have you come to a point of, I don't want to say necessarily mutual respect, but certainly acceptance to a degree? And beyond that, there are some people who get to the point where they actually feel that these discarnate souls, spirits, entities become an extended family, as it were, and kind of go with the house. They're part of the scene there, and they
right.
don't fight it anymore. How would you describe your current disposition with all this?
Considering the fact that every time we mention selling it, things happen. Now, I've decided not to mention that again.
Okay. Good idea.
Yeah.
I think you've reached a peaceful plateau of coexistence and mutual respect.
And it's, I think that's nice for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
I think whatever they are, whoever they are, they're clearly trying to, for whatever reason, reach across. And now here they've got a situation that is certainly comfortable for them. I think they'd probably like that.
And there's about at least 50 more questions I would love to have time to ask you.
Send me an email, I'll answer.
Okay.
I think what we
All
should
right.
do is invite okay. Darlene to come back, if she like, on a future program at her convenience.
And For an update.
We'll talk more about this. I'm sure there's more to it.
And there's quite a bit more.
Well, we have about 4 minutes, so what would you like to leave us with tonight? Any particular story, anything that comes to mind? Anything about you and your husband? You said something about no one heard it but me and maybe Brad. That things might not be as good as you'd like them to be now in the marriage. That's okay. Everyone's got their rough edges and things. How do you see this working out long term for you? Is he okay with this?
Yeah.
It's not a problem. It's not keeping him on edge at some level that's bothering him.
No, not at all.
Good.
Okay.
He is blissfully unaware. Just doesn't even...
Well, you see, my father, God bless him, we had manifestations in the house continually throughout my childhood, my sister's childhood. The same thing, our dog barking and snarling and at something, hearing footsteps. My dad claimed never to see it. I mean, when the salt shakers flew in the air, when the telephone flew off the hook, he claimed never to have seen or heard a thing. And, you know, God bless him, and that my parents had a wonderful marriage of many, many years, and he never laughed at the rest of us. He never ridiculed us. He accepted that we were seeing things and perceiving things that he just did not.
Huh.
Wow.
Great. Darlene, let me thank you on behalf of an awful lot of people who really enjoyed spending time listening to you tonight. You did a fabulous job.
You did an excellent job.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope you will consider Jeff's invitation to come back in the future.
I sure will.
Great.
Just let me know and stay in touch in any case, will you?
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Good night, darling.
Good night.
Good night.
Well.
Yeah.
Another amazing story.
I want to talk more about those little girls. I want to talk more about the eye contact. There are a lot of things that we didn't have time, but she did such a wonderful job. And again, a person of strength and down to earth. And that was her rock through all of this.
Yeah. Well, I think the relationship now that is going on between her and her daughter, I'm sure to some degree, and whoever those folks are, is stable. Sounds
mm-hmm.
like it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you know, we've talked over the years to people who have bought homes that were haunted, and
mm-hmm.
and after a while they say, well, we got used to it, and we liked them. We wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. And you said earlier, as if they were unseen members of the family. That's the way a lot of people look at it. Wow, this was a fast 3 hours.
Sure was. And just remember, all of you folks out there listening, either live or on a time delay, or they do a lot of time shifting now on radio, you're welcome to call in whenever Brad is here. 800-876-4123, and share your story if you have something. It can be something like this. It can be anything unusual. Well, my friend, wild
yes.
indeed, and lots to think about.
Lots to think about.
So
Sherry sends her love.
Indeed, and return the same, please, and we'll see you on August ninth.
Indeed.
Already. Take care.
Already. Okay, take care, my friend.
Good night.
Good night.
And to all of you, a good night, and we'll talk soon.